and where Bill would rush in where Angel Spirits tread. Bob would not disagree with him, but they would let us reason together, you know.
You really didn't have much opportunity to know Bob as he got sober.
No. As I met him casually along, or we went back there for a weekend or something, I didn't know him that well. And then when we came out here, of course, we weren't in that close contact with Bill either.
But Bill came out here.
Bill came out here, and Bob didn't, you see. So there was a great difference there. There was a void there. But Bob was a loving, kind man. And he had a laugh. His laugh would bring the rafters down. Bring the rafters.
He was a steady influence, kind of the anchor of the thing, and Bill was the promoter.
The force. I don't like him called a promoter.
Promoter? Okay.
Bill was the force. You know, it's like when people go out here, I have so many young people, I don't say God be with you anymore because of the new movies and everything. And the best greeting you can give a young person nowadays, whether you know it or not, is may the force be with you. Did you know that?
No, I've heard the expression.
It's one of the movies, Star Wars or something. And so now I say to young people, may the force be with you. They love it. You have to, you can keep this program even keel if you just will get down with them and bring them to the keel. You can't, I tell them, you know, your language is not acceptable after you've been sober 6 months. When you first come in off the street, I'll tolerate it. I'll tolerate your four-letter words, but you cannot talk about God in one breath and use that, like the MF and whatnot, you know. You cannot use that in my meetings. I will not stand for it. I do not stand for it and say, I'm an addict alcoholic. No way. If you're an addict, go to NA and handle your addiction there. Now, if you have a problem with alcohol, we will help you with your alcohol. If you have that twofold problem, we will talk about your alcoholism here, and we will talk about your addiction at NA. Never the twain shall meet.
I think when we were here last week that you had mentioned, we all know that Bill took gin and sedatives.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, it's right in the big book.
Yeah.
You know? And we also know that Dr. Bob did the same thing.
I took anything I could drink plus amphetamines.
But Bill, I have been told, never discussed anything but his alcoholism.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know that much about Bob. You know, we really didn't have him that long.
I don't think he ever did either.
Most of the people that knew him, there just aren't that many
left. Bob, have you ever read Dr. Bob the Old Time?
Oh, yes, I love it.
That's beautiful, isn't it?
I just love it.
I don't necessarily like the new Pass It On.
I think the biggest hole in my life is the fact that I can't know them personally.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I didn't get to, I never got to see Chuck Chamberlain. Yeah. But I mean, you know, some of those people, mm-hmm. and apparently Chuck and Bill, I don't know, mm-hmm. you know, they spent quite a bit of time together back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, it's really unfortunate that, but you, of course, the legacy they've left us.
Oh, it's fabulous.
Oh, you want to ask about the personality change? Well, I don't think there was much.
What?
Personality changes between when Bill was drinking and when he was sober.
He was not that argumentative. He was forceful. It was like Bill would say something and you put up an argument and it was like a so be it with Bill. He would say, this is what is good for AA. And he had no further way to go. He was not that feisty, and yet he was feisty in his own way. He was forceful, and he wasn't gone. So many people say, oh, Bill Wilson, you knew God. No, I knew a man named Bill Wilson, who God blessed mightily.
And I think we have to keep it in that perspective, that he was a human being.
He was an alcoholic. And God looked out and he said, now look, we took care of Matthew, the thief at the gates, and we took Paul, the murderer, on the road to Damascus. I forgot my alcoholics. And I think he picked us up. He chose us a few at a time, a few at a time, and said, go do this work. Go do this work. And we did it. We don't know why. You know, don't sit there and ask me how AA works. So many people say, how do you think it works? Well, I go to meetings, I clean house, I love God. I do all the things the Big Book tells me to do. And that makes it work. I go along day by day doing the best I know how. Just the best I know how. Some days are good and some days are bad. And then some days are better. I know that through two tragedies in my life, that there comes a time when I, as a human being, have no defense against first drink. And both times, my God has lifted me above it. When my son and my husband were killed, I didn't know how I'd go on. My God carried me on. When my daughter committed suicide, she was the last of my family. I've got no one else. And I was shattered. And my God just shut me off. And my beautiful AA members here in town came in. And they cleaned my house before I came back to it. The house was a wreck, you know. After all this had happened. And they cleaned the house up, and the food started coming in. We had a terrible rainy season here in February. And they jet-propelled me. I sort of, you know, I've never sent thank you notes because I can't remember who all was here. I said to Bill Smith, Bill, you should have seen her. She was beautiful. And he put his arm around me and said, baby, I was there. You know, I met another man from Marysville at a meeting in Woodland here a few months ago, and I said, you know, Hard Rock, I wish you could have seen our baby. And he said, Vivian, Betty and Hal and I came. Well, I hadn't looked at the guest book. I don't know who all came in this house. I know one lady. My daughter didn't have any flowers. And they got me in a car, a small car that wouldn't take my wheelchair. And another truck followed us with my wheelchair in it. And they took me to a flower shop. And I didn't know how I was going to get a piece for her casket. She had no flowers at all at that time. And the lady who was with me said, don't worry, pick out what you want. Arrangements had been made. Well, I thought they were going to give me credit, but somebody called and got credit for me. So I picked, and I picked low because I knew I was going to have to pay for it. And one of the women in the group had sent her credit card down and okayed it. So my daughter had flowers. The groups here knew that I was having a financial time. And instead of a lot of flowers, I got envelopes with money in them. There was more food here. We had food for a month after the funeral was over. After the funeral, this room, they were sitting on the floor. They were in the bedrooms. They were in the kitchen. They had come from San Jose. They had come from Marysville. They had come from Yuba City. They'd come from Sacramento, Stockton, Roseville, Fresno. All people that knew my daughter when she was a little girl, that loved her. There were only two people there that she called friends that she'd been running with on the street. Two of them. And that place was filled with love and caring. Peggy Miller, do you know Peggy?
Uh-huh.
Well, she was Aunt Peggy to Rhonda. Yeah, she's also our H&I librarian. She was so shook up. She was Aunt Peggy. And she had gotten a Valentine that Friday from Rhonda. And she said, "Aunt Peggy, I'm not happy." And Peggy was going to call her and take her to the spring fling. And when she called, the line was busy. She was going to tell her she'd come get her. And so she rushed ahead and went to the meeting and didn't call back. And she had an awful time handling it. She said if I'd gotten her, she wouldn't have died. You know, I'd had her with me. I would have loved her well. I don't blame God for Rhonda's leaving me. So many people say it's God's will. I know for a while I had a hard time handling that. I'd go to meetings and I'd talk and I'd say, well, it's what God wanted. I'd come home and I'd cry all night because I'd say, God, why are you doing this to me? I've done everything you asked me to do. Why her and not me? She was only 20 years old. She was beautiful. Maybe I'm prejudiced, but she was beautiful. Why did you take her? And then in June, thank God for AA literature, the grapevine came out. It is not God's choice, it is yours. And it allowed me to get angry at her. To go to the cemetery and sit beside the grave and say, how dare you do this to me? How dare you hurt me like this? I am not grieved yet. I can't cry. If you notice, I can't cry. It's here. And it don't go away. But it will one of these days. But I also know that my God, in permitting her to do it, knew her heart more than he knew her actions. And 3 days before she died, we played a tape that I have here about losing God's hand. I have to go back to the chapel. And she sat cross-legged on the floor, and she said, Mama, where did I let go of God's hand? I've got to go back to the chapel, huh? We had a man that delivered oxygen here. And I thought she was trying to, what they say, come on to him, you know. After she was dead, I found out that he was a saved again Christian. And they were out in the garage for a half hour to 45 minutes talking about God and the Bible. So God knew her heart. And so today, my daughter all day flew with the eagles. And tonight she's talking to God. And it's okay. It's okay. And she died for a purpose. Lisa was her running mate. As bad or worse.
Is that right?
And she said to me, Vivian, can I live my life for Rhonda? I loved her so much. I said, sure you can. She said, I want to do all the things that Rhonda didn't have a chance to do. She's going back to college 2 nights a week. She's studying computer. She wants to be a veterinarian. But she figures if she gets computer down, that she can earn enough money to go to Davis along with a few scholarships and become a veterinary.
Isn't that fantastic?
And AA works.
And it may come out of the pain.
Yeah.
You know, that thing, through pain we grow. I want to ask you two things.
What?
You made a comment earlier about it being in the genes. Were your parents alcoholics? Is there any alcoholism in your family?
Not that I know of. But you see, I was born in Ireland. And I don't know all my aunts and uncles.
Are you Irish? Maybe we can make an assumption. Irish? You're not Catholic, by the way, are you?
You know, that's a good cop-out, isn't it? The reason I'm an alcoholic is that I'm an Irish Catholic.
Yeah, you hear a lot of humor about that.
Yeah.
You know.
And you also hear, I came from a good Christian family, and I say that's a prerequisite to alcoholism.
Okay, the other question I had for you, and I didn't ask this at the time we were talking about the 12-step calls, and sharing our experience so that they can identify, and then asking them if they want to go to a meeting. How did you detox people at that time?
Well, early on we used to give them formaldehyde.
How did you get it?
From the hospital.
The formaldehyde?
Sure. Just little bottles of it. And
go ahead.
Pills.
Tell me some of your experiences in sobering up drunk. Or detoxing them enough to, you know. Was it with booze? Did you use booze?
Well, no, we didn't use any booze. We used formaldehyde. We always had booze on hand.
Okay, see, some of the early timers that I talked to, or the long timers, said that they would use maybe an ounce of booze and 3 ounces of K-Ro. They always did, and particularly K.V. Budd in Fresno, who's been sober 39 years, almost 40, talked about K-Ro syrup.
And orange juice.
And orange juice. Or honey.
Mm-hmm.
And would put an ounce of booze in it.
Mm-hmm.
And in order to get that ounce of booze, of course, they'd have to drink the 3 ounces of K-Ro syrup.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me some of the experiences you had maybe in that.
Well, we gave K-Ro syrup. We gave honey and orange juice. I used to have a thing I called a Hortense. It was oil, vinegar, salt, and Tabasco sauce. You ever heard of that?
Well, no, you know, that's what they used back in Bill and Bob.
Mm-hmm.
What was it? My gosh, I can't remember now. It was sauerkraut.
Mm-hmm.
And what else was it?
I don't know for sure.
But there was something with sauerkraut. So, and Bill was on that kick, you know, that was going to supply vitamins and stuff like that and nutrition or something.
Mm-hmm.
But go ahead.
I use that a lot. And they say, oh, God, here she comes with a salad dressing. You know. And if I had somebody in the house when we had the recovery house, to keep them from going into DTs or convulsions, I used a lot. We used to buy the big 5-pound cans of bouillon. And we'd make that bouillon, you know, it's salty to start with. And so we would add salt to it. You see, if you go into a hospital, then they're afraid you're going to have DTs or convulsions. What do you get?
Limerin.
No. In the old days, you got IVs. Saline solution and glucose.
Sugar.
So, you give them sweets and salt. And pour it down. Every hour on the hour. Every hour on the hour. Whether they want it or not. If you want to stay in the house, you take what I'm giving you.
Did you folks bring drunk home and sober?
Damn right we did. What else are you going to do with them?
Yeah, no, the hospitals wouldn't take them, obviously.
No.
For sobering up. And if you didn't have the halfway houses until the 50s.
My husband and I have gotten on a plane in San Francisco and gone to Tucson. Pick somebody up from Southern California that had gone to Tucson and had a relapse and had all the police in Tucson looking for him because he went and tried to make up with his wife and found out she was having an affair with a highway patrolman, and he hit the highway patrolman over the head with one of these standing ash cans. He was hidden in the hospital. So we flew out there to get Jack, and we looked all over for a hospital. Looked all over, because we wanted to get him back home. We finally found a Catholic hospital with an Irish doctor, and he gave us orange juice and formaldehyde, and we decided to come home by rented car, and all the way from Tucson to our ranch, Jack sat in the back seat singing, "Volare," remember the year that was out? We kept him happy. And then we took him home and we detoxed him. Now, we detoxed him with a shot of wine, watered. And then later, half hour later, he got orange juice and honey. A half hour later, he got a Harriet. He got his...
A Harriet?
A Hortense.
Oh, Hortense. Okay.
And... We just kept stuff going down him that would give him glucose and would give him saline. And it was just like a direct IV.
But the formaldehyde, the doctors at the hospital was with.
Knock him out, it was bad.
Huh?
It was bad.
Was it?
Yeah. We had it taken away from us. This tape I want you to hear will tell you how it got taken away from us.
Well, those, they... Knock a guy out for 2 days, wouldn't it?
Could kill a guy.
Yeah, I mean, he's just really sucking.
But you see, I don't believe that anyone that's an alcoholic needs liberating with Librium or validating with Valium.
Yeah.
I do not believe it. There is no way. I think the only liberation we have is a fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous walking together. I tell all the newcomers, you know, while you're here, I will not walk ahead of you. I will not walk behind you. I'll walk beside you. As long as you call me before you take the first drink. If you call me after you've taken the first drink, then you can go through your hell alone. Because you see, I've been in hell. Today, I'm not looking for heaven. I'm still backing away from hell. You know, Father Dowling used to say that. Our non-alcoholic priest. The alcoholic is not reaching for heaven. They're backing away from hell because they've been there. And it's that simple for me. I will walk anywhere with anyone who is trying. I don't care how freaked they are, how weird they are, how dirty they are, how broke they are. If they want sobriety... Their lifestyle makes no difference to me. No difference. They can be gay. They can be working the streets. They can be bank robbers. Those are lifestyles they have to handle outside of AA. And when they get the program, they will either drop that or they'll be better at it. One way or the other.
Okay, well, one final question because God, we've been talking so long. God bless you for putting up with my stuff.
I love to talk about AA, you know. You
contrast,
can use four or five more tapes. I don't care.
Contrast AA in 1946 when Vivian got sober with AA today. And that'll be your swan song for this tape.
I think what has happened to AA is a lot of the unconditional love has disappeared. I think that today there is too much me love. Too much really caring for the sick alcoholic. There are too many people who don't remember their last sobering up. They might remember a lot of their drunks, but they don't remember what it was like to get sober, and I do. I don't have to remember my drunks. I can give a pitch and talk about my last sobering up, and that's all that's necessary. Because I know where I went, And today, nobody has to go where I went. I know that the general public is more aware of alcoholism, but it still doesn't accept it. And I know that we have lost a lot of the unconditional love. A lot of it. And a lot of it is that we don't look to the old timers like we used to. I don't like to be called an old timer. Because you see, maybe I've got almost 40 years sober, but I have to work this one day at a time. Maybe I'm stupid, but that's how I first learned it, and that's how I have to remember it. One day at a time. And when things happen to me that are tragic, I have to take it one heartbeat at a time, like Sybil taught me to. One heartbeat at a time. To just get through it, and God will take care of it. I have to learn to surrender. I have to learn that I am not that much, that only by being a failure can I be a success. I have to admit that I am a failure at living. And too many people today will not admit that. There were total failures in all areas, even drinking. We couldn't drink. We were absolute failures. And the day I said, I surrendered to my sponsor. It took me a long time to surrender to God. But I took a hold of his hand, and he believed for me. I do that with the lady you just met tonight. Could not believe in God. And the only tapes she carries in her car are hymns. How Great Thou Art, One Day at a Time, The Rose, Why Me, Lord? Because she learned it here. You know, it's the only way I can teach. I try to walk like I talk. I try very hard. I know that, like I told Lisa, Lisa said to me the other day, "Are you ever wrong?" And I said, "Oh, yes." She gets so mad at me because I'm not her sponsor, you know. I refuse to be, because she lives with me. Her sponsor is rather weak. Sometimes Lisa will say to me, "Well, I want you to tell me." I'll say, "No, you don't." So I tell her how I feel, right from the chest, right from the shoulder, you know. And she'll say, no, man, yeah. And two or three days later, something will happen. She'll come to me. "Aren't you ever wrong?" She tries to prove me wrong. And so far, I tell her, "Yes, Lisa, I'm wrong." But you see, I keep a close inventory of it. I believe that the fourth step is for a searching inventory. I believe that further down, people call it a maintenance step. You see, all the steps are maintenance to me. Every one of them. But I promptly admit it. If I say something tonight that offends you or hurts you, waiting until I go to bed tonight and tell God about it isn't going to make you feel better. So when I come to the fact that I've done something wrong, I'm either going to tell you now, or when you get home, I'm going to call you and tell you, "Hey, Bill, look, I made a mistake. Maybe I wasn't all right. Or I was wrong." But I think that the amends have to be made right then to the people. And I hear people say, "Well, I inventory myself every night." That isn't what I get from it. I think if I snap you up about something, I have no right to snap you up. And I either say, "Hey, I'm sorry I said that." Or I'm sorry I used that tone of voice. Right then. Because you don't deserve that. Whether you're right or whether you're wrong, you do not deserve any abuse from me. If I can show you in a ladylike way where you might be wrong, not saying that you're wrong, but saying, do you think you could think this way or that? But I don't have any right to argue with you or contradict what you believe in. That's not my place. My place is merely to carry this message to the best of my ability to you so that you can start living a better life. Now, how you choose to live that life is none of my business. How you choose to think is none of my business. But I'll tell you a little secret. Don't you ever let me catch you breaking a tradition. Because I'll stomp it. You see, the 12 steps are our form of recovery. Right? What those 12 steps are to us, the 12 traditions are to the survival of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I don't have any business, like some of the people you've talked to, of being judgmental. Don't believe I have any right. I have a right to sit here and say, I miss the old time AA. I miss the love. I miss the caring. You know, you could come into our meetings drunk as long as you kept your mouth shut. It didn't matter how you smelled or how you looked. If you had yellow streaks in your pants or what. We didn't care. All we wanted is to have you there. You don't see that anymore. Drunks are put out of meetings nowadays. You know? And it absolutely shatters me. That unconditional love.
Easier to sober up now or 40 years ago?
I think it was easier 40 years ago.
Because of those things you talked about.
Because of the love and the caring. You know, nowadays they say, get our number, our telephone number, if you need us, call us. We used to say, do you have a telephone? And, you know, maybe the gal would live clear across Los Angeles. And the next morning we'd get together, and we'd get real close to this gal's house. We call her. And we'd say, you got any coffee? Well, she said, yes. We'd say, put the pot on. We happened to be in the neighborhood. Maybe we drove 3 hours to get there. Because we knew if we caught her at home, her being a woman, she'd have to get dressed. She'd have to try to get her makeup on. And by that time, she would be shattered and need a drink. And so we would stop it. Then we would call her. We didn't wait for them to call us.
That's a big difference.
We kept track of our people. They have a little group in Roseville that does that. Very caring group that meets on Sunday night. 2-hour meeting. And they get phone numbers. And the women call. And they stop by. And either they get them dressed and take them out to coffee, or they drink coffee with them and discuss the program. And it's great. But they don't do it in too many groups anymore. Not too many groups.
And I'm afraid I'm probably one of those that's just as guilty of not doing some of those things.
You know, you go out to coffee after the meeting. Now, you've got a home to go to. You don't know what that newcomer has.
Right.
And you tell him, we love you. And then you stand with one click in one corner and another click in another corner and you say, let's go to Lions. Somebody else will say, let's go to Seasons. And so one bunch goes here and one bunch, and here stands the newcomer. Where is he going, do we know? We give him a little white chip. Our group gives him a package of literature. We give him a white chip and a package of literature. And we leave him standing there.
Yeah, we've done that in our home group. You know, there are some of us, you know, we try to get the newcomer, hey, we're going for coffee, we're going for a meeting, and you come along and, mm-hmm. you know, let's talk. And, and yet, I think we even have our own little clique. You know?
We tried very hard not to have here. I saw it working in San Jose a week ago Friday night. I went to a group called a book study group. First time I ever walked into a meeting where they told me what I had to talk about. And after the meeting, somebody said, hey, they got to the mic, we're all going to Coco's, meet us there. Well, they took me into Coco's, and there was a table clear across that restaurant. And we sat down. And before the night was over, all the groups that were going out for coffee after their meeting, not just a book study group, but from all over San Jose, I'll bet you there were 50 people, come in and walk to that table and sit down. It was fabulous.
We do that.
Mm-hmm. Lions.
Lions is kind of our gathering.
Yeah, that's where we gather here is Lions.
You know, they just seem to be able to accommodate us and are glad to have us. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, we better wrap this up. I don't want to wear you out.
You're not wearing me out. I'm talking about AA.
God, you can't wear me out. God bless you. Okay. Is there anything?
I was just wondering if you've been involved in this month and get those.
Yeah.
Were you involved in general service at all, in any capacity?
Down south for a little while.
Because you talked about you stay out of the politics.
I didn't like it. It was too politics.
Well, that's why it brought to mind general service.
There was too much politics. And I figured, let people who can handle that do it. I come from a political family. I had brothers who were senators and whatnot. That's why I never give my maiden name. Because I still have politics in my family. And it would harm them.
And that brings up an interesting question. And I just became aware of this, that apparently those people in service, like Will, or Les Watson, who was our last delegate, do come to H&I to try to keep H&I at least abreast of what's going on in New York. Does that work well that way?
Yeah.
To try to be...
We have one delegate that tries to affiliate us with New York. And she... That's all things to all people. I don't want to mention anything.
No, Coastal probably.
Yeah.
What the heck?
But there's no one that has that much importance. We have a reason. It's nothing against New York. It's our way of protecting a
Oh, the way you explained it earlier made sense, but thank you for bringing that point up, because I forgot I had wanted to get back to that. But then at the same time you were saying that, I was thinking, like Will and Les Watson were talking about, they go to the H&I, keep their mouth shut, they try to give a report, not try to meddle in it or anything like that. They'll let them, here's what's going on, you know, and that sort of thing.
So but you see, Will was very active in H&I.
So he knows.
Before he got into politics.
Is that right?
Oh, yes. Will was area chairman. No, not area chairman. Regional chairman. Yeah, regional chairman. He's held offices in H&I. Will's not a braggart. Will grew into what he's doing now. Will is probably...